Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Nothing. Just super busy. Just trying to stay above water, but nothing new.
I see you're rocking the glasses today.
Yeah, I am. Because it's... So, let me tell you what's happened.
Okay. But just in time for episode 54. Let's put that out there.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Wednesday night, or Wednesday, I'm coming back from out of town. Link, you know, who is here snoring at my feet, has this degloving on the back of his foot. So when we adopted him, if anybody's ever seen him,
what
his
is
back
it?
Leg...
What's
well,
degloving?
I'm about to explain
okay.
it.
Okay,
His back leg is missing his fur. He's got this big giant scar. And what a degloving is imagine your hand being degloved of your skin.
Oh.
It happens to people's feet in car accidents or in their cars. It happens to dogs when they're chained to, say, like a fence or something. It will deglove their skin. And so they don't know what happened to him, but when they found him and picked him up at the pound, he had this leg injury. It's never really bothered him, right? His foot looks a little wonky. Sometimes he limps, sometimes he doesn't. It's never been anything that's needed any type of medical attention. So in the last few weeks, though, the foot has looked weird. He hasn't been limp on it. He hasn't been lame on it. But the middle toe, let's just say, on his back foot swelled up to the size of maybe... bigger than one of those giant grapes or like a baby little lime only Filipinos use those things. Anyways, Nate takes him to the doctor on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of town. I'm about 2 hours from home and remember that the dog had gone to the vet. And so then I ask him how it went. And he said, well, I didn't want to tell you until you got home. And I was like, well, that's not an option now. So
right.
Tell me. And I was like, are you kidding? What's going on? And he said that they thought it was cancer.
No.
In his foot. And that it appeared to be in two toes, like what would essentially be like a pinky toe and his middle toe. And they didn't know if it had spread, but if it was just isolated to those areas that they could amputate his leg and we would go from there. And so then, of course, I'm upset about... Go ahead.
Is he going to have a little cart?
No, so they don't get the carts unless they have two.
Okay.
If they lose both. So he would just be a three-legged fucking dog, like a tripod, right? So,
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh.
No, it's okay. It's all right. It's, the idea of three-legged dogs running around, it's funny. One of my clients had one and that's what they called him, was tripod. And there's self-help groups for tripods dogs.
Okay.
Because, you know, I guess it is a thing, so I got really upset because Felix had cancer, Rogue had cancer, the cat had cancer. Anytime any of our animals have gotten cancer, they die within 2 months. And the last thing I'm prepared to do is lose Link, right?
So right.
I spend the next 2 hours crying on the way home. I get home.
Oh.
I'm upset. A dog and I go to bed. I even put on like the biggest pair of sweatpants I could find, the biggest sweatshirt I could find so it could actually cuddle against my skin without it burning.
Oh.
Nate told me that the radiologist would look at the paper or look at the report yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and we would get the report of what was next. And then obviously, you know, we were going to have his entire body scanned and make sure he didn't have cancer anywhere else before we amputated the leg. And then also, you know, I was scared for him of, you know, how does it feel to wake up one day with no fucking leg?
Right. It feels really weird.
Right. And Nate was trying to tell me, well, the vet said that dogs don't really think like that and dogs just live in the moment and it doesn't bother them and they adapt just fine. And I said, listen, that's fine for you guys to believe, but how do you know that? Nobody's ever asked a dog, how do you feel?
Right. And sometimes I wonder if that's some bullshit they tell us to make us feel better.
Well, that's what I said. I said, if that makes you feel better, fine. But it doesn't make me feel better. I can't imagine how he's going to feel. He's not going to understand what's happening. He's not going to ever be able to catch a fucking lizard again. Let's be honest. He doesn't have an athlete body.
No.
To go from four legs to three. He needs all three of them. The fucker's 70 pounds.
Yeah.
That would be like chopping off my leg when I was 300 pounds. It's not easy to just get up.
Right. Poor guy.
So,
and he's going to go scratch himself, and he can't scratch him because the leg's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's not there, right? Like, so you can't tell me that they just forget that they even had four fucking legs.
Right, because it's muscle memory.
Right. It's got to be there. It also, like, the thing of, well, dogs don't feel the way we do. I think that's bullshit. Link, when I came home on Wednesday, like, he jumped up and hugged me and, like, put both his paws on my chest and tried to lick me in my face.
Aww.
My dog never does that because it's not something I allow. And also, he just never really gets up off the couch.
Right.
And it's almost like he was comforting me.
Right.
So again, don't tell me that they don't have feelings. And maybe that's in my head and maybe that makes me feel better, but whatever. So I spent all day yesterday boycotting. I'm not working. I'm not doing anything besides spending time with Link because in my mind, he is going to die. And and I mean, that's just what's happened to every one of our dogs, right? And,
right.
And also the alternative sucks as well. You know, would I have adopted a handicapped dog? Would I have been a good, probably not. And not because I don't have the heart for it, but because I don't think I'd be a good owner for it, right? Like, we're pretty lazy when it comes to Link. We're lucky because he is lazy like we are.
Right.
So would I have adopted? Probably not. And so then I feel bad that he's stuck with us as his owner, you know, being a three-legged dog now. He would have been better off with somebody else. So all Aww. Fucking day, just crying. That's why I'm in my glasses. Your eyes actually do get puffy underneath, which I didn't realize until I tried to put on some makeup like midpoint yesterday. And 4 fucking o'clock, Tabby, we get a call from the doctor.
Okay.
And it's the radiologist. So The radiologist didn't look at it on Wednesday. We're waiting for his report.
Okay.
He calls Nate and he was like, you know, there's definitely drastic bone change because he had just been to the doctor 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
It might be an infected nail bed that the infection has gone into the bone and has been isolated in the bone. So we went from cancer to an infected fucking toe.
Oh my God. I want to bitch slap that vet. I like want to fucking hit them right now. You can't put us through that shit.
I could not fucking believe it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I've been mourning him.
Right.
The last 24 hours, understand, like preparing myself, because that's just the way my brain works, is that I need to prepare for the worst case scenario. And Nate was like, well, maybe they were just preparing us for the worst case scenario. Then you say that. You say it could be an infected bone or cancer.
Right. Yeah.
You don't start with fucking cancer.
No. You know what? Vets don't have any bedside manner. None.
It's
They're like, that's it. It's cancer. They're dying. And the next thing you know, oh, yeah, by the way, whoops, we made a mistake. It's just an infected toe. Fuck you.
And on top of that, they said, we can just take the toe. If we have to, we'll just take the middle toe. Big fucking difference between a toe and a leg.
Whole big difference. And I was wondering why they had to take the whole fucking leg.
Well, because if it is cancer, they want, and if it's gone beyond just the little nub of the toe, whole fucking leg's coming off. Because if it's been isolated to just that limb, they want it out. If it's been isolated to just the toe, they can take it out. They won't take out the whole foot, though, because dogs won't remember, I guess, that they don't have. So it's better for them to lose the whole leg than it is to have an uneven leg.
Huh. Interesting. But I thought it's so weird.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
So that's why I'm in glasses, because my eyes Every time I closed my eyes yesterday, they were stinging. Mm-hmm. They just hurt. Mm-hmm. Every time I looked at my poor dog, I was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an infected fucking toe.
You know, you're...
Maybe. I mean, maybe. It still might be cancer, but I'm right. going with the fucking toe thing now.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, because I can't live another day like I did yesterday.
No. Your vet sucks.
I know.
Your vet did this with Harley, remember? Like...
When she tried to kill him and it didn't work.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it's, so our normal vet was closed for a vacation. So this is the same vet that I think put the cat down.
They're trying to kill your animals.
Yeah, right. I don't know. To me, it's like, holy fuck. You can't do that to somebody. And then also just... Now I know how I'm going to react, right? When something happens to my dog, stupid fucking dog that I shouldn't even care about, right? So that annoys me on top
you
of it.
You love that little fucker.
I do, 100%.
You not love that?
I know. And then I felt terrible for Nate, but I told him, I was like, I can't have you crying. Like, you can't be that right now. I've stood by your side for Felix and Rogue and Harley and the cat and was the strong one and grieved for you. I need you to be that for me. Right. I can't have you sad about the dog. I need you to be the uplifting one. Cry in private.
Yep. Don't let me see it.
I know that sounds mean, but I need you to be strong for me because I can't be that person now.
And that's
for anybody, for me, for our kids. All I'm selfishly only care about myself and this dog at this point.
Right. As you should be, because that's your baby.
Yeah. So he did that too. He's like, I'm crying by myself in my office. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, but that's what the future looks like when this really happens.
Offense. Yep. You're going to be doing this one on your own, kiddo.
Right. Right. So, that's why I'm in glasses.
Oh, I'm sorry, boo.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's a fucking toe now. So
yeah.
Who knows?
So get your shit together.
Yeah, right.
Right? Yeah. So did you happen to watch the VP debate?
I just saw clips of it. Did you watch it?
I did. So it was a lot more civilized than the presidential debate.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment, and of course everybody talked about it, was when the fly landed on Pence's head. I literally went up to the TV and tried to swipe it off my own TV fly in our house. And Dion,
really?
I was like, well, you know, we live on a farm, right? So, and Dion's like, nope, that's there. And I went, oh, okay. I was like, this is going to be the most talked about thing about the entire debate is the fly.
Yeah, it was, right? How did he not, do you think he felt... the fly.
Maybe he felt it, but because he's so trained not to react, you know, because you're not supposed mm-hmm. to like have these weird normal reactions.
Right.
So
right.
Either he ignored it or his hair was like, because he's got a good set of hair on that head of his for his age. He might not have felt it.
Well, that's what one of the podcasts that I was listening to this morning said, made them wonder if it's a toupee or a wig then, because how could you not feel it?
I don't know. I mean, I have super thin hair, so I feel everything, but I don't know. If you have really thick hair, you might not feel it. Touch it so, so light. I mean, think about how light a fly is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm barely touching it, but I can still feel something on my head. I'm just even using not even a full fingertip. And I have pretty thick hair. It sits up pretty high.
Now
on my
add
head.
your mousse and your hairspray and your products and all that other.
Yeah, it's all in there. I don't wash my hair. No, I don't wash my hair all week. Girl.
I wish I had that luxury. I gotta wash my hair every single day.
No, I haven't washed my hair since Tuesday. And it's Friday.
Nope, I can't get away with that. If I did, it would be plastered to my head.
Yeah.
I look like a damn drowned cat.
And let me set the record straight on this. I don't care if he has a hairpiece or not. I think it looks good, whatever he has. but I did either find it to be super disciplined and restraint to not shush a fly the entire time. So did he just ignore it because that's what he's been taught to do, whether it's a heckler or whomever, you just get your point out and ignore distractions? Or maybe it's
maybe
fair.
I don't know. I just thought it was...
What did you think of the rest of the
debate? I thought it was good. They both made their valid points, and, you know, I liked it. I liked it because it was more civilized. You could actually understand what the other person was saying, you know,
right.
Unlike the presidential debate.
Yeah, that's that was, I think, the biggest takeaway from most of the articles I read about it was just it was the complete opposite of the presidential
mm-hmm.
debates. They actually were able to speak. What did you think of Kamala interrupting him or clapping back on him when he interrupted her and said, I'm speaking?
So, you know, she has her right to say that. And I think that was good that she's like, look, I'm speaking now, which is fair because it was her turn, right? And this said,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't understand. I've seen a lot of the memes and the whole, you know, no woman talks back to him and that kind of stuff. And I don't feel like she was talking back to him. She was declaring, this is my time to speak. You need not to interrupt. And that's fair. And had she interrupted and he said the exact same thing to her, it would have been fair. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have an opinion on it. I'm not all
right.
Like, whoa, go woman power over it. I'm like, nope, she just stopped someone from interrupting her. She'd say the same thing to a woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he hushed her at some point, right?
I don't remember that.
To when she was interrupting him.
So I don't remember if he did or not. I don't remember
yeah.
that part.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think equally it should be allowed. I think there's a lot of women from, I think the moment that she said it, a lot of women sat up taller in their seats, which is always a great moment to see. And to see a woman of an equal status against him and at a level of VP, I mean, that's something that as women we haven't seen very often, right? We've seen it, what, twice?
Right. Hillary Clinton and...
So,
who's...
Has she run for VP or
well, she
president?
Ran for president, but it's still of a woman in of
yeah.
equal power.
Yeah, the only other VP, I think, was Alaska, right?
Yes, was Sarah Palin. Yeah.
Palin. Yeah. So I think, understandably, whenever she said that, a lot of women stood up a little taller, and it's nice to see. I agree with you, though. If we're all equal, it's not really a big deal. But the truth of the matter is we're not truly all equal. So there is a moment to stand up a little taller, which was cool.
Yep.
You said that they both made their points. Which points did you like?
Girl, I can't remember at this moment, to be honest with you. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Kamala kept saying that Biden wasn't going to raise your taxes, which I kind of have a hard time believing because I've heard Biden say he was going to raise taxes. So I'm not really sure how I feel about that. You know, I'm pretty set on who I'm voting for.
Right.
How did you feel?
I did notice, I think the Biden raising taxes is specifically towards middle class and lower, right? Because the ads that I've seen recently for him in regards to taxes is that he will not raise taxes for the middle class and lower class, and actually bring more money in by canceling the large tax credits for the mega wealthy
mm-hmm.
that the Trump administration has put into place. So raise taxes on the wealthy and give back to middle class and the poor, which has always been the Democratic way. I mean, it's not
no.
a new message. It's not a new board. Some people support it. Some people don't. There's nothing
no.
different there. I mean, Democrats believe in spreading out wealth where Republicans believe in gathering it all for themselves.
Well, they believe in capitalism, so earn it.
Yeah, but let's be honest. Most of those people Did they not come from some type of money that was given to them? How many millionaires are truly self-made without the help of an inheritance from another wealthy
Well, Ben Carson is one, and he ran for, yeah, so one. And a black man. But in that, there's many of them. You have to look them up.
Right. I think that people get greedy with their money and believe in independent wealth when they have enough of it to keep for themselves. I think it's pretty selfish for people to be against a small portion of what the Democrats believe in. I don't care if I pay more taxes to the underprivileged because it's the best for the mm-hmm. community. I don't have a problem with it.
No.
Okay. I just don't. Mm-mm. No. I think that, you know, people take handouts all the time. Tax reliefs and things like that are handouts. You can't be 100% against it. You're taking fucking credits. The law just made it available to you. It's somebody else's right. money.
Or it's...
Right? Like your tax return. You told us about your large tax return. Yeah, that got held. Where did that come from?
That came from our money that we paid. Because the amount of money that we put in and spent, we didn't get back. We didn't get the entire thing mm-hmm. back. So a portion of right. our money went to somebody else.
As it should, right? To help pay for roads and schools and everything else in this community. Do you not believe in paying
no,
any taxes?
No, I believe it. No, I do believe in paying some taxes as long as the money is mm-hmm. going where it's supposed to be going.
Right. And where
it should
that?
Be going back to the schools. It should be going back to the infrastructure. And a small portion of it should be going back to pay for the elected officials, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what it should be doing. But anything else, you know... So,
mm-hmm. so then you getting a large tax credit for something that you've invested in, that's no different than flipping it around the other way, right? And giving the poor back most of their money. So it's the same thing.
I'm not sure, Sabrina, because mm-hmm. yeah, I got a tax credit because I spent that money. Right. So like we put solar panels on our house. And so it's an environmental right. thing. We got a huge check back for that, which we were going to take that money and apply it back to the investment that we already made. So we got a discount
right.
on it because of the government. But was it really a handout? I mean, I guess I can kind of see it like it. We got a discount.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's one and the same, especially like for me, right? I don't believe in global mm-hmm. warming. As far as I'm concerned, do you guys believe in global warming and the environment and everything else? So you put on solar panels for your
benefit.
Own financial yep. benefit, right? The government created a tax credit based on an environmental
right.
incentive. You do it for your own financial gain
yep.
and receive credit back for it. So again, it's like the whole money thing. People are only against it when it's their own personal money and they want to hold on to it. When they still, they'll take money from the government.
Oh, yeah.
As long as there's legal loopholes for it.
Right.
Right. Everybody will. So to say that, I don't know. I always get really, really weirded out by anybody that is so against helping anybody less financially stable than them. Why?
Right.
We
should be helping them and we should. But I also believe part of me believes that we should have a community where we do it where you want to do it. It's not mandated. It's not forced upon you. Like you donate to charities that are going to feed the mm-hmm. poor, right? You donate to these organizations or you volunteer your time or you know what I mean? We need more of that as well.
So do you not think that our tax money should go to government services that are helping the poor? That it should then be just voluntary? We reduce our tax credit and then make money that goes to WIC and... I don't know what else is out there. What's that monthly check people get?
Welfare?
yeah, welfare, all those things that we shouldn't be so helping.
I agree. Yes. So, like, I do believe we should be assisting. But again, I know there are situations where people are abusing those systems. So I have a hard time with us going out, working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, busting our ass, and then that money is being automatically deducted, taken to somebody, and it's not always the situation, but to somebody who is fucking working the system, sitting on their ass, they don't care, they don't want to better themselves, and they're just taking the handout. Now, some of that money is going to people that actually need it and are actually in a position, and that I'm good with because they need it. And I'm good with helping people that really need it. But people who just want to sit there and go, give me money, I have a hard time with that.
Isn't it the same, though, as Trump only paying $750 in taxes? Because he's following a system that set up laws that allows him to retain more of his money, where welfare has set up systems and rules that has allowed people to, like you said, play the system, but within the system, to obtain
more money. I looked that up. The reason why Trump only paid $750 on that tax year is because he had prepaid his taxes, and that was what was left. So he paid it.
So, but again, what I'm asking you is if you follow the tax guidelines and whatever rules it is, and you're only paying the minimum rules that they've set up for you, is that not the same as retaining and obtaining money? If you, the people that are working the system in welfare, they're following the rules that were set up. It just allows them to, like you said, sit at home and collect money.
So, and then technically, I should just sit at home and collect money. I should not make any money. I should let somebody else pay for me. And you keep doing that, and you've got more and more wealthy people who start doing that. You're not going to have any money. There's not going to be any money in the economy.
And again, so if I push back on you and say if we allow those same large tax credits for the wealthy or anybody else, and they're not paying as much in taxes, there's then not enough money in our economy.
But they're getting...
Who's paying? I guess it's the middle class.
It's always the middle class. And the large tax cuts are for the businesses because they have to be creating jobs. And what's creating jobs is providing income to families. And then that this extra disposable income is going back into the economy. It's a whole circle. You just can't take from the top and give to the bottom.
Well, everybody's paying taxes. The whole circle is still paying taxes, right? The middle class is still paying taxes.
Right, but if you...
To the whole system. But if the Republican Party keeps reducing the amount of taxes the wealthy is paying, we take that.
Right, but they're...
Why are we fighting for
that? They're reducing the taxes for the middle class of the families. The bigger tax cuts are for the businesses so they can hire more employees. They can create more jobs for the middle.
Who's cutting taxes for the middle class?
Trump is. Pence said it in the VP. They've cut taxes. That is what they had said.
My taxes haven't gone down, so he will cut taxes in the future.
From what he had said, it was that they have created an additional $4,000 per average on the family income. They said they cut taxes.
Mm-hmm. My taxes didn't go down. Did yours?
I don't know if my taxes went down. I didn't pay attention.
Right.
So I'm just telling you what they said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, again, it comes to the hypocrisy of they're both arguing two things. One wants to be against the person taking free money over here, and one wants to be against the person taking advantage of keeping as much of their money as possible. It's the same thing. People want money either way.
Yeah. Right. I think the only difference is one person wants to work and the other one doesn't.
I mean, I guess that I wouldn't say that people on welfare don't want to work.
No, and not everybody that is on welfare doesn't want to work. It's depending on the particular situation, but there are people and a substantial amount of people that are on welfare, because I know some of them that actually just fucking take the handout, refuse to go.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of people that need it and use it as a position to be uplifted, right?
Yes.
To move forward.
Right. The problem is the welfare system in itself does not run efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem. It does not run efficiently. Mm-hmm. It allows for people to take advantage of it. And basically take advantage of other people. Instead of saying, hey, you need to be out here working. You need to be looking for jobs. You have X amount of time. You da 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 da. They're just like, oh, nope, you have another kid. Here you go. Here's some more money. You know, eh?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the welfare system works. I do know, at least from the WIC system 20 years ago, is that you had to provide proof of income.
Okay.
And not everybody qualifies for it. And I know people that are technically lower middle class, mm-hmm. right? There's this big group of people that aren't poor enough for a handout, but not rich enough to pay their own fucking medical bills.
Yes. And
those people get nothing.
And those people are one that we need to help.
Mm-hmm. And how would you suggest helping that?
We have to create the system. We need to change the requirements of the welfare system. It needs to become more efficient. It needs to really vet the people that are applying for it to see what is really going on to help mm-hmm. them. And then
we still use our taxes then to fund that program.
Yes.
Okay. Well, because that's different than it just being a volunteer donations.
Right. Well,
kind of system. Right.
Correct. And we need more of the volunteer in addition anyways. We need both. Mm-hmm. We need to be mm-hmm. able to have programs that are going to have, that are government run, that will help, but efficiently ran. And then you can mm-hmm. also volunteer to other organizations as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did hear, so this is what the reviews that I read on the debate is that Pence did a very, very good job
mm-hmm.
supporting Trump and being a mouthpiece and pro-Trumper better than Trump did himself.
Okay.
They said that Pence was very clear on what Trump administration has and will be doing better than even Trump was able to speak about it, which they all said was really good. So again, people who were planning on voting for him and were unclear, that it became clearer after the debate.
Yep.
And then on Kamala, uh-huh. whatever her name is, that she did a very good job of letting us know who she was. So where I read a Republican-based opinion where they said that she talked too much about herself rather than answering the questions,
mm-hmm.
that it was actually needed, because before the debate, everybody was saying, well, we don't even know who she is. We don't know the things that she's accomplished. So she used that moment to explain what she's done and how she's done it mm-hmm. and things like that. I did like when Pence clapped back at her and started reading her records in regards to African Americans and San Francisco.
Right.
And how since she was a senator, the number of men incarcerated had actually gone up.
Right.
Which the mediator and her tried to keep him from talking about that. But I did like he was able to get that in.
I like that as well, because that was a mm-hmm. fair point.
Right. Right.
So.
So, what's next?
So, well, since we are talking about a little bit of capitalism and non-capitalism, let's talk about Monopoly.
Okay.
All right. So, I found this article that it's the secret history of Monopoly, and it kind of goes along with our badass bitch a little bit.
Okay. Okay.
So, in 1903, a left-wing feminist named Lizzie Maggie patent the board game. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys know, and then I'm going to jump 30 years. So, in 1932, in Philadelphia, a man named Charles Dodd and his wife Olive introduced their friends Charles and Esther Darrow to a real estate board game. So at the time, the game didn't have official name. It didn't have a box. You just drew up a piece of paper, and the person who knew the game knew the rules and explained it to the other person. So there was actually no rules, like official written down rules. Mm-hmm. And they called it the Monopoly game. So Charles Darrow, who was actually in need of money, saw this as a great idea. And he asked his friend, he's like, can I have a written copy of the rules? And Todd was like, well, I don't think there's ever been any written rules, and nor did it appear to be any. And so he's kind of concerned. But what happened was in 1903, in D.C., a progressive woman, Elizabeth Maggie, invented the rules. Mm-hmm. What she was trying to do was she creates, let me find it, hold on, because now I changed where I was going. She created Monopoly to reflect her progressive points of view. Now, she was pretty much a badass for this time. It's 1903. She's unmarried, which is unusual. Mm-hmm. She was head of household, which was extremely unusual, which means she actually saved up for her own home, bought her own home, had several acres of property in Prince George's County, and then which is in Washington, D.C., and then she shared her home with a male actor who paid rent and a black female servant. She was teaching classes about politics after work, but needed to reach more people. So what was happening is at the turn of the 20th century, board games were becoming very popular in the middle class homes. And not only was it discovered that it was a pastime, but it was also for a means of communication. So people would be talking while they're playing this game or talking about what's going on in the game. So she called it Landlord's Game. So she spoke publicly about it. It was a practical demonstration of the present system of land grabbing with all its usual outcomes and consequences. It might well have been called the Game of Life, and it contains all the elements of success and failure in the real world, and the object is the same as the human race in general, the accumulation of the wealth. And that is what she said. Now, what she, the rule, her rules were a little different. Her rules were, you could choose a capitalist version, where, which is the type that we play, buying up all the land, charging people and making money, right? The wealthiest person win. And then she had another version of it, which is where when anyone made money, all the wealth was dispersed equally among all the players.
Okay.
And so it was to make you think about contradicting philosophies. So she, and you had to choose which rules you were going to play by.
Oh, okay.
Right, so it was kind of cool. It was a little bit different. Now, it aimed to seize on natural human instinct to compete. She created the two sets of rules. Her vision was to an embrace of dualism and contained a contradicted within itself. And, of course, the Monopoly caught the public's imagination, which is why we now have Monopoly as we have it. Mm-hmm. So she patented the game in March 23rd, 1903, and became popular with the left-wing intellects and on college campuses. Believe it or not, it caught on with Quakers in Atlantic City and found its way into Charles Darrow's hand. That's because I guess the Quakers didn't actually write it down, because they just passed it on, and that's how Charles Darrow found it. Parker Brothers sold hundreds of millions of copies. So Lizzie received $500, no royalties, and she had no idea they were stealing her game until it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
So 1936, she gave interviews to Washington Post and the Evening Star showing they stole her game. Parker Brothers may have had the right to the 1924 patent Landlord game, but they didn't tell the story of her game invention dating back to 1903, or game had been in public domain for decades. So their Parker Brothers only gives Charles Darrow credit for it, not her. Even today, they still give him the credit for it because he technically is the one that took it to Parker Brothers, even though she had the patent for it. Mm-hmm. And they just bought it, but they gave him the credit for it. I mean, it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, so how did they buy the patent from her? But she agreed to sell the patent, though, for $500.
She did, but she did not realize that she thought she was going to be getting, like, deals to do other games for them and would be in business with them and all this, and they literally, because there were other similar games out at the time, and they were buying up all those patents as well, so there would be no competition. Mm-hmm. And then she realized what they did. They took her patent, redid her game, and fucking made millions and millions and millions and millions of billions of dollars off of this game. And she only got $500 for it. And no credit. Yeah. Not even credit like saying, hey, this game was invented by a woman.
Right.
It's crazy.
It is. It's, there's some talks going on from, the brilliant and crazy Kanye West, and I'm saying brilliant sarcastically.
Okay.
But he's been going off lately about the status of the record industry and how the record industry took advantage of young rappers, including himself, because they own the rights to your music for the rest of your life. So just like Lizzy, where they might make $500,000, but the actual recording company makes billions of dollars off that one song.
Right.
But the artists aren't.
Mm-mm.
And so some of the arguments that I've heard about it, though, comes to the fact that those artists, this isn't a new thing, right?
No.
This happened to Lizzy back in 1903.
Right.
1930. You got to do a better job negotiating for yourself.
Yes. Agreed. Even for the artist today.
Right. And even as a woman, right? So I get the desired spark to be aggravated by it, but do better. You have to fight for yourself. And that comes to negotiating. You just can't assume that somebody's going to take care of you at the end.
Right. Agreed.
Because big business does not fucking work like that.
No, they don't. And look, you know, I've daydreamed about somebody coming to want to pick up my book and offer me $1 million. But then I stop and I think, if someone wants to pay me $1 million for my book, it's got to be worth at least $7 million, if not more.
Right.
Right? So I'm like, no, we're going to talk about a higher number because you're not fucking me over, right?
Right.
And you're right. I think that is one of the skills that women need to work on, is better negotiating, is saying, and being able to walk away, right?
Like, mm-hmm.
Women don't like to walk away. They're scared to say no. And there's nothing wrong with it. Be like, mm-hmm. nope, you can't have it. They're my books. It's my rights.
Right.
And if you want it, you're going to pay the price that I feel comfortable with. But at the same time, these other female artists, sometimes, look, it happens. You get so excited. They offer you $500,000. You're like, oh, I hit the fucking jackpot because you've been so poor before.
Right.
Instead of like, you're like, yes, 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 yes. Oh my God, this is so great. I'm going to da 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 da. And then you realize you got gypped.
Right. Or it's a matter of playing a longer game, right? So where the way that it was being explained on this podcast I was listening to about the music industry is that before, you needed a recording studio to be involved so that they could negotiate with the radio stations to get your music out. So they were a necessary mm-hmm. evil. But they would also, those music companies, flash big dollars in the artist's face and say, okay, we'll sign here. This song's a hit. We'll pay you $500,000 right now. We'll just go ahead and prepay you. And we'll do all the work for you. We'll hustle. We'll get it on the radio. We'll get mm-hmm. it in movies. We'll do all of this. But we own the song. And so it's a matter of, like you said, being willing to walk away and say, okay, well, I need that $500,000 now. Or no, sir, thank you. You could pay me $25,000 and I'll hire you as my pet music pusher, right. But I'm not signing over the rights and we'll split the royalties right. from here. And play a long game of it. The problem is that these artists, and this is what Charlemagne was talking about, including Kanye, at that time, they need fucking money. So they're willing to sell it and sell their souls for $500,000. You can't blame big business for that.
No, and the other thing is, look, that's why you have agents. That's because right. entire agent's purpose is to make you more money because they get a percentage of it. And you negotiate that percentage up mm-hmm. front with them. So they work right. to make you more money. So when you're an artist, right. first thing you should be doing, if a huge record label is calling you and you're not represented, it, first thing you should be doing is like calling around for agents. Immediate.
Right. I do think I'm very happy for Lizzie that it, because she seems right. pretty smart, right? You said that she was, so we can't play that she was just dumb and wasn't aware of what was going on. She was smart enough in 1903 to obtain a patent for a game that she was handwriting on a yeah. piece of paper. I mean, it shows a picture of the board game. She was literally making square boards on cardboard boxes, yeah. basically. But smart enough to take that idea to obtain a patent, then she should have seen it all the way through. To let it go for 30 fucking years.
Yeah, I mean, so she didn't get, what year did she get a patent? 1903. Yeah, that is, I mean, yeah, it just apparently fell by the wayside because she didn't get the money
right.
until like 1935. So I don't know mm-hmm. if it's because she had no real means to actually get it out there. Because, you know, Parker Brother, again, has money to produce right. it. And she did it.
Right. Or if she maybe created the idea, but because the game had been pushed around and traveled so much in the next mm-hmm. 30 years... maybe the version that Monopoly actually became was different than what
Ruh.
She actually had and could have credit for. And so we could look at it at the other inventors that had different varieties of this game and the game company paid each of them. Maybe they just paid them each for their portion of the, right. their idea. Like her idea might have been the board and the general concept. But the fact that she didn't have solid rules written down and two different options and all this stuff seems like maybe somebody over 30 years really
right
because
she still had the what was it? They still had the Go, but it was called Mother Earth Space, where they were supposed to have performed so much labor upon Mother Earth that they received $100 in wages. But
she sounded like a tree hugger.
Well, she was a left progressive woman.
Yeah.
But considering it was 1900, most work was manual labor.
Right.
So it wasn't uncommon to make it like that because
right.
if you were to make money, you had to go out and physically work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they also put in there that any player who ran out of money went to the poorhouse.
It's true.
She's right? like, yep. She's like, you ran out of money. You're in the poorhouse.
Now, what do you think about our friend Jen and her kids play Monopoly in the version of if Jen's empire is going down,
uh-huh.
she can just go ahead and bequeath it to her daughter. And then that way the daughter gets the empire
uh-huh.
and can beat the other players, which now there's an argument. I haven't played with them that way, and that's not the way that I grew up playing.
Right.
But there's a lot of use of the word cheating going on.
Yeah, because that's cheating. Because
that's what
I'm sorry,
too.
Because in Monopoly, there's no children. You don't get children through the game.
Yeah, take the child out.
Right.
She is just another player.
She's just another player.
Saying, yeah, it's saying you hand off, you're about to go bankrupt, but you own 6 properties. So you go ahead and instead of going completely bankrupt, right before you're on your last dollar, you slide your entire estate over to Dion.
No. No.
Right.
No.
Cheating.
No, it is cheating. Because if you want my properties.
Jen, you are a cheater.
Yes. If you want my properties, you wait till I go bankrupt and then you buy them cheaper. Because that's the business way of shit getting done.
That's not the way they play.
And let me tell you what, I fucking kick ass in Monopoly.
Do you? I haven't played it in years because it's just...
It's Monopoly too long.
And the game of life is a commitment.
Yeah, it really is. And you got to be fully in it to win it.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing that I've committed that many hours of my life to.
No, not anymore.
I'm not doing that. What about the game, since we're talking about board games, did you ever play that game Risk?
No, Dion did. It was not my game. I didn't like Risk.
No, it's literally the most boring and stupid game I've ever seen. I don't understand it.
Well, because I think it was more like Monopoly for men, because it's very, war and rugged, and I'm going to take over these territories. And
yeah, it was like taking over countries and moving these little wooden pieces all over the board.
Right.
But weren't there super hard trivia questions in it, too?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, because you had to, like, it... Or maybe that's the game Trivia Pursuit.
There was some way... No, it was rolling dice and numbers and beating an opponent with numbers. And then, depending on how many, like, army pieces you had in that country... determined whether you took it over or some crazy shit like that. I don't know.
Right, right.
Dion plays it on the phone now.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, sometimes I get in here, he's like, motherfucker, damn it. while he's shitting, of course.
Right, right. I play Dr. Mario on my phone pretty regularly.
Do you?
Yeah, I love it. Other board games that we had, and I was telling somebody about this the other day, was... When we were younger, we must have received it sometime around middle school, high school. So 92 forward.
Okay.
Between 92 and 98. And it was called the Donald Trump board game. I'm back and you're fired. And it was, it said you're fired on it. So it was one of my sister's favorite games.
Really?
We really enjoyed it. It kind of looked like this. Okay. I don't know if you can see, but there's like skyscrapers and stuff on it.
Okay.
So the board game is circular. There's money. There's properties. And you kind of go around, and it's the same thing as Monopoly, where you're investing in these Trump properties and trying to build the biggest portfolio. My sisters and I love that game.
I never heard of it.
I don't think most people have, because whomever I was speaking to last week had no idea about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I was talking to Doreen, and she said she vaguely remembered the board game coming out, but not anybody who actually played it.
Yeah.
And we played it.
I have
regularly.
No idea. No concept of that game whatsoever.
any board games from your childhood that you just really, really enjoyed?
Monopoly. We played Life. What was that other one? Othello. Did you ever play Othello?
What's that?
So it's actually kind of cool. So it's a board, and it looks like a chessboard, right? But there's no colors on the little checkers on the boxes.
Uh-huh.
And you have white pieces, and then the other person has black pieces. And then you can only put X amount down. And then they put X amount down. And then if they put a black piece next to your white piece and there's all white pieces, you get to flip them till they're all black.
Oh, I've seen that, but I didn't know how to play it.
Yeah, so then at the end of the game, when all the pieces are filled up, you count who has the most color, and that's the winner.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Yeah.
We didn't play that.
Nope. I did that. I did Chinese checkers.
Mm-hmm.
Checkers, of course, but we like Chinese checkers. That was about it.
Do you remember that board game that kind of had those like arrows or spikes, and it had those round circle discs, like you said, and you kind of had to like move them from space to space, but they'd be lined up on these little spikes on a board?
Are you talking about Table Shuffleboard?
No, it's you play it kind of in a box, though, and you have these circled things.
I know.
And they move.
I know what you're talking about. I can see it, but we never played it.
Yeah, I have no idea. There's those kind of, like, movements that I just had no idea how people were playing.
Uh-oh. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. We were big, of course, Clue. We still play that. Clue is one of our favorite games.
Okay.
The Donald Trump game we played all the time. There was a couple, like, girly games we played. There was the Sweet Valley High board game.
Oh, my God. What was the board game with the telephone?
Oh, yeah. It's it was the Slumber Party one.
Yeah.
I almost just ordered that because Lorelai and I had a slumber party last weekend.
Oh, so, how did that go?
It was good. It actually ended up being Friday and Saturday night mm-hmm. and overflowed into Sunday. She just really wanted me to sleep in her bed for some reason. So I told her that I would have a slumber party with her Friday and Saturday, and we did like face mask and I painted her toenails. I bought those little baggies you can put on your feet.
Right.
With the lotion in the inside. We put on fake nails and I dyed her hair and it was fun.
Nice.
It was okay. But it was that telephone game. I think it was called Slumber Party or
something like that.
Yeah, girls talk or talk something.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. But the Sweet Valley High game was fun, too.
Yeah, I think I remember that one. Yeah, mm-hmm. But that telephone one was, I remember, I was like, I liked picking it up and hearing them talk on the phone.
Yeah. Did you have a telephone in your room?
Hell no. Not until I was way older. Not until I was, like, almost 18.
Mm-hmm.
And
I didn't have one.
And even when I did get a telephone in my room, I still had to be very careful what I said because my mother was always fucking listening.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. So, my mother, well, she told me a lie, and I knew it was a lie when she told me, but I wasn't 100% sure, so I was still kind of cautious. But she had told me that she had put a listening device in my bedroom so that she knew what I was saying at all times. So she's like, I know what's going on all the time. And of course, my dumb ass went looking for it. Well, because I was nosy like that. I was like, oh, yeah, let me see if I can find this. I didn't find it. I'm going, no, she didn't. But she could hear everything in that house.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I was very cautious about what was said over the phone.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to have a phone in my room ever, but that didn't keep me from getting a phone in my room. I would go downstairs. My parents were very, very structured, and I know I've shared that before. So mm-hmm. they weren't staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning watching movies. Dad went to bed at 10, 11 o'clock, and then we would kind of have the run of the house, but tiptoeing.
Right.
Because he wouldn't just leave us awake. But I would go into the garage and grab the phone out of the garage.
Uh-huh.
And then just bring it into my room and then call people from there after my parents went to sleep.
Gotcha.
And then if they wanted to call me, I'd have to tell my friend Aaron, like, all right, well, you can call me at 11:30. And I would call, I'd go downstairs, sneak into the garage. You had to be super quiet because they can hear that fucking garage door.
Yep.
Walk down the steps into the garage, steal the phone, go back up to my room, and then plug it in, call 411, you know, the information line, and then wait at 11:30. I would just sit and listen to it. It would tell you today's weather, all this other bullshit, right? It tells you your local information for around. This is before the internet, people.
I remember.
So then at 11:30, she would call my house, but it'd be call waiting. So then I could just click over.
And there she is.
And we could talk all night.
Right. See, I did not have that option. My mother would have heard, because when she went to bed, I was already had to been in bed.
Uh-huh.
Right? So there was no sneaking past my mother's bedroom because she slept with her door open and the stairs creaked. And if you made the slightest noise, she would fucking wake up in a heartbeat.
Oh, really? My dad was such a heavy sleeper.
Yeah, no. And our bedrooms were in the back part of the upstairs, and hers was right by the stairs. And the only way out was down those stairs, and she'd fucking hear you. And let me tell you what else this woman did. because her bedroom was here. Mine was right down the hallway. I had to sleep with my door open, right? Uh-huh. She had one of those old TV stands that had the glass doors. Well, she would position the glass door so she could see my bedroom through the reflection.
Why?
So if I tried sneaking or doing some shit, she knew what the fuck was going on. Like, I do not kid you when I tell you there was no chance of me doing anything.
But why was she like that?
Well, my sister had gotten into some trouble,
mm-hmm.
had some blinders on. And so when it came my turn, those blinders were off. Let me tell you.
Right.
She knew when I was lying to her. She'd randomly show up at my school, parked in the parking lot, hiding, to see mm-hmm. if I would notice her and to watch what I was doing, see who I was hanging out with.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. My mother was, for lack of a better word, because of all the shit going on today, but my mother was a Nazi.
Was she?
Oh, yeah. There was no getting around any of that. Mm-mm.
And then what happened if you broke a rule, or did you not break the rules?
No, you didn't break the rules. Uh-huh. You'd get your ass beat. You'd be mm-hmm. on some... You thought that was lockdown? Wait till you see all what punishment was. Punishment wasn't coming out of the room except to go to the bathroom and to eat.
Uh-huh.
No radio, no TV, no nothing, no books. Sit in your room.
Mm-hmm.
It was being like in an insane asylum sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's weird that I find it so dramatic when it's not that my dad wasn't any different, but my dad didn't have to. I would have never found Chuck hiding in a parking lot spying on us.
Right.
Because it's not that he didn't find things out, but when he found them out, I don't know. It's just, that's a little different for me. My dad he was a heavy sleeper, so he went to sleep. We weren't, we were allowed to have our doors closed. That wasn't a big deal.
Right.
I didn't have to be in bed if he was going to bed.
Oh, no.
We just had to be quiet.
Right. No, see, my bedtime, because I had a bedtime. Like,
uh-huh.
9 o'clock was my bedtime up until 10th grade, 11th grade, and then it moved up to 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
There was no going to parties on the weekends. There was no none of that. You were home. There was none of that. There was no
right.
normal childhood shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't
mm-hmm.
have them.
So then did you not have a lot of friends either?
I had a few friends, but having friends was hard. So, like, I was not friends with the popular people,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if my mom got a bad feeling about someone, she made it really fucking impossible to hang out with them.
Right.
So if I wanted to go, you know, hang out with friends and she didn't like the friends that were going, she's like, nope. Or she'd make it so it was so embarrassing that I wouldn't want to go. Like, mm-hmm. fine, I will drive you and pick all your friends up and da-da-da-da, you know, instead of just dropping
yeah.
me off at the mall.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. My parents, my dad and stepmom banned me from hanging out with my friend Amber. I was 16, 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
Banned me from speaking to her ever again. We had got caught smoking pot and having a party. No, we didn't get caught. One of my sisters fucking ratted me out.
Oh.
So they banned us from ever being friends again. So what that meant was that I just lied.
And
I
you tried
said,
harder.
Well, no, I just said that I was hanging out with somebody else, but obviously I was hanging out with Amber because there weren't cell phones, there weren't cameras, there was no way for them to track us or do any of that, right? They really had to go on our word unless they found out differently.
Or they track you like my mother did and just show up to make sure you were telling the truth.
Yeah, just showing up somewhere. So my dad and Amber was so scared of this rule that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, so when I was 30 years old, I was back home visiting my dad.
Uh-huh.
Text Amber, hey, I'm in town. My dad said to come on by, or no, I said, you should come on by and see me. And she was like, I'm not allowed to come to your dad's house. And And I was like, really? It's been 15 fucking years. And she was like, the last time I saw your dad, he said that we weren't allowed to be friends. Mm-hmm. So I had to go into the living room and ask my dad at 30 years old.
Can Amber come over?
Can I be friends with Amber again? Because, by the way, we're friends on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure you're friends with her on Facebook. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot about that.
He didn't even care.
Right. So the fear was there for the consequences of what was going to happen, but it didn't keep me, per se, from breaking the rules.
Right.
I always kind of pushed my dad's rules
to the limits
as far as I could. I was just lucky enough that most of the time I didn't get caught.
Right. I had a few, okay, so she caught me one time. I was with a boyfriend, and we were driving home from the mall, and she really liked this guy, but she got a bad feeling. And then him and I stopped by his house because nobody was home. We're making out, and she just saw his truck, knew it, started banging on the door, screaming and yelling and throwing a fucking fit. Mm-hmm. So thank God she didn't realize the front door was open. We scrambled, hightailed our asses out the back door because it was a townhouse. I was like, grab a jacket, grab a jacket. And he's like, okay. So I put on the jacket and we came around and we're like, what are you doing here? And she's like, rah, 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 yelling. You're fucking not where you're supposed to be and all of this sort of stuff. And I was like, we stopped for a jacket. She's like, you're so full of fucking bullshit. She looked at Adam and said, don't let me see your fucking face again. And like literally hot dragged me out. But, yeah. And I got in so much trouble. Oh my God. Yeah, we didn't do that again.
My sister Catherine probably got caught the most with boys because my dad had very strict rules when it came to we couldn't date until a certain age.
Right.
We couldn't go anywhere with a boy until they'd come over and met my father. That was a big requirement. So much so, like, the first time Tim and I became boyfriend and girlfriend, I think we were sophomores in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted Tim, I wanted to go out with him somewhere. And so I had to invite him over for dinner. My parents, I've called Tim, we're coming over to pick you up. My parents fucking left and just went to go pick him up on his own. Could you imagine?
Oh, wow.
A 16-year-old boy and mom and dad without the girlfriend just showing up to your house and picking you up and driving you back.
Oh, my gosh.
To this other person's house. So, like, I can remember calling Tim and I'm like, my parents left. And he was like, for where? And I was like, they're on their way to pick you up. And he was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? And I'm like, I don't know. And so, I followed the rules when it came to boys.
Right.
Catherine did not.
Okay.
So like I said, my parents had a very strict schedule, right? And it's probably the reason why I am the way I am. They went to work and got off at 3:30, which meant in traffic, they'd get home about 5:30, right?
Right.
Every single day. So we could get out of school, which school got out in high school at 2:30, uh-huh. I think we'd get home. We'd be home for a couple hours without anybody home.
Yep.
Now, the rule was when my parents weren't home, nobody was allowed in our house. Even if they were home, before I allowed you in my house, I would have to go inside and ask my parents first, can Tabby come into the house?
Yep.
I wasn't just allowed to bring people into the house. But the biggest rule was nobody in the house when our parents weren't home. Well, people came over to our house every fucking day.
Okay.
Every day. My sister was a senior. I was a freshman. There were these other boys in our neighborhood. One that my stepmom called the pound puppy. The kid across the street, David. And
please
my
tell
sister
me,
had the...
Wait, why was he called the pound puppy?
Well, because my stepmother was so conservative that at this time, so you have to imagine it's 1994, 95, 96.
Okay.
That the boys in our town, it's a surfer city, it's Virginia Beach, they were all skateboarder, grunge,
yep.
Long hair, that it didn't look washed. My stepmother thought they look like homeless kids. So she called them pound puppies. They look like orphanage. Even though they lived in the giant house across the street from ours, she didn't understand why they look like that.
Right. Okay.
So they were the pound puppies. So the pound puppies would come to our house every day. And this kid, David, was so crazy that he would He would take off all his clothes except for his boxers and just kind of run around our house. And my dad had this. He's going to fucking kill me. He had a bag of porn. Paper bag. And so then they would watch the porn too off of our VCR. And one day, all of a sudden, you could hear the door slam.
Oh, shit.
In the back. So we've got two. It happened twice. Once with my stepmom, we had three boys in the house plus Aaron. Immediately, and while they're gone, like, we've got ladders out and we're climbing up to the second story of our house and climbing onto the roof and just fucking mayhem while my parents weren't home. As long as the house looked perfect by 5 o'clock, we were good.
Right.
She comes home early. David, I almost said his last name. David is laying in our formal dining room with no fucking clothes on, with just his boxers on. This kid, Tony, goes running out the fucking backyard, one of the doors in the living room, I think, which was one of the doors we weren't allowed to use, which my parents noticed. Mm. That was something, because immediately when they got home, it was, well, who used this door?
Right.
Because, it, you know, back then there were certain rooms we weren't allowed to use. Yep. There were certain doors we weren't allowed. You didn't just have fucking free reign at your parents' house. This was their house.
Yeah.
Right? So, Carol, same thing. The radio in the living room was on. And so she went to turn off the radio. If she would have looked down, David was behind the chair, wrapped in a ball like this, in his boxers, holding all of his clothes. So we're all sitting in our room because, again, she is a person of habit. She'd come in, go right upstairs, change out of her work clothes into her regular clothes, do her stretching. So the moment she went upstairs, all of us went running around, grabbing shit. Like, if people ran out of the house. David ran out of the house to the neighbors with his clothes in his hand. Again, if my stepmom would have looked out the fucking bedroom window, she would have seen him running across the yard naked from our basically naked. So the time that it didn't go so well, my dad showed up.
Oh, I bet. Because your dad noticed shit.
Well, he heard us. So we hear the slam door of the car. We go fucking scrambling. We got to pick shit up really fast. One of us took a jump from the second floor into the room over the garage. So my dad walks through the garage and hears
that.
Oh, it wasn't one of us. It was fucking David.
Naked again?
Again.
Was he?
Yes. He wasn't naked this time, but he's inside our house when we yell, "Fuck, Dad's home." So he runs apparently from the second floor, jumps into my sister's bedroom, the room over the garage, and then goes and hides in her closet. So my dad walks in the house. We're all sitting in the living room. Hey, hi, Dad. So now there's all three of us sitting there.
And he's going, what?
What did he just hear upstairs?
Right.
He said nothing. Hey, girls, what's going on? Again, he's in uniform. He was in the military. He goes upstairs to change. And then David's side of the story is, so my dad goes up the front hallway or the front stairs to his room, comes back down into my sister. We had two stairways in our house, back down to my sister's room. And David says all of a sudden he saw this big fucking hand come around the corner
and
into the closet and snatches him out.
Oh, I bet so.
Snatched him out, dragged him downstairs where now we are, and we're like,
I don't know how that happened.
Thankfully, my younger sister and I, Sherlyn, are sent upstairs because David's technically not our friend. Catherine's friend. And Catherine, at that time, I think, had already been caught in the car with him because he was also our paper boy one early Saturday morning with the windows fogged up. My dad ended up calling the police on David.
For that?
Yes, for trespassing. It made him sit there as the police came. He lives right across the street from us. As the police then start lecturing him on trespassing, being in our house without permission, my dad still makes fun of him for it. And David still would say stuff to my dad about that moment of just seeing that paw come in his hand to him. and just
that was a life moment for him right there. It was a life-changing moment.
It's one of those moments where you're like, fuck, like what's right? About
like
to happen?
I'm sneaking into another man's house with his daughters and I'm not really thinking about what the consequence is gonna be.
I know.
Because now as an adult,
I know.
If you caught Lorelai sneaking in boys, can you imagine what Nate would do?
I don't know. I mean, even just telling that story and thinking about the certain rules that we had in our house, I think as a, when we're younger, we think that right. they're absurd, right? That, like, why couldn't I use the living room fucking door? What's the big deal? We weren't allowed to use our front door. We could use our front door to get the mail, but and we could answer the door, but we, as children, weren't allowed to come in and out of the door. My parents didn't even come in and out of that door. We used our garage door. So it was a big deal when things were moved yep. a certain way. And a big and deal was made out of it. Mm-hmm. The living room, we weren't right. allowed to sit in. The formal dining room, we weren't allowed to walk in, not even as no. a pass-through. And because the
and
cleaning
the
lines, ladies would fucking
because
vacuum, yeah,
I
they
bet
didn't know
your
it.
Cleaning lady had military lines because your father's military. And you.
Well, she didn't at first, but she sure did when he yeah. made her cry.
Well, so because my mom was a cleaning lady, right? And very strict. Mm-hmm. When we vacuumed, there was military lines, which meant you could tell yeah. if someone's been in the room. And my mom was right. the exact same way. If one fucking little thing was moved out of place, she would notice. So when I went snooping, yeah. I made a mental note as I removed things. I made a mental note of exactly where they were and how they were. So when I went to go put them back, they were in the right spot.
Yeah, you had to.
Yeah, it was like fucking psychological warfare.
It was. It was. Now that I'm older, I don't think some of it's that absurd, right?
No.
They literally were just protecting their investment. And having kids that, like, now that I've had my house painted again, and uh-huh. the kids keep touching the walls, I find myself yelling, don't touch the walls!
Right.
Like, stop touching the walls. Why are you guys... I just paid $3,000 for somebody to paint over your fucking fingerprints. Stop touching my walls!
And now you understand why your dad is like, don't walk through that room. I just spent $4,000 on that brand new carpet.
My dad and I had this thing about socks because when I was younger, when you do cartwheels and stuff outside, you have to take off your socks and shoes. And regardless, when I like to play outside, I like my feet to be under grass, right? So
right.
One time my dad came home from work. I had been doing cartwheels out front. He comes inside with my socks and shoes and puts them down and asked for my glasses. And so I took off my glasses and he fucking wailed me across my face for leaving my socks out front again. And so that memory has always stuck with me about these fucking socks, right? So then
yep.
If you're a parent and you remember when these kids started wearing Nike black socks or white socks, they're not the no-show socks, but the kids, when Ethan was in middle school, mm-hmm. Started wearing these tall Nike socks with slides or boat shoes. Well, then I would find these fucking socks everywhere. In the yard, getting eaten by the fucking lawnmower. Because same thing, he would take off his socks and go and play.
Right.
And so then when I called my dad, I think Ethan was in freshman. And I was having some hard times with him. And I called him. And I'm crying. And I was like, and these freaking socks. Like, I get it. I get it now.
Right?
Like, why can't you just pick up the socks? And why do I find them everywhere? I'll uh-huh. be gardening and pull something out. And it's a fucking Nike sock. Like, and I was like, now I get it. I get it. I get
yeah.
why I got slapped across the face.
And you know what happened? You never left another fucking sock laying around.
Yeah, it stuck with me. That's for damn sure.
Right? So, did Ethan get his sock beating too? Or did you just keep picking them up?
Yeah, I think I just kept picking them up.
Ugh.
Yeah.
No.
Spent a fortune.
See? Uh-oh. That's craziness. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom was just as strict, just as crazy. Like, I remember, so because my neighborhood was mainly black, and I lived in a court, right? And I wasn't allowed to leave the court. Like, I could play in the court, but I wasn't allowed to leave.
Yeah.
And I was, like, the only white girl in that court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I was picking up slang and ghetto and all of that sort of stuff. And my mom was trying really hard to make sure that I was speaking proper English.
Mm-hmm.
And she had warned me and she had warned me and warned me and warned me. Well, I remember one time I said something and it just struck her the wrong way. Let me tell you what, she took me by the back of my neck. She dragged me down 3 flights of stairs, threw me into the fireplace on the harp, opened up the fireplace, threw soot in my face, and said, "Now you're black."
Oh, my God.
I never spoke slang again.
Right.
I was like, whoo. Yeah, needless to say, to this day, if you touch the back of my neck, I might hit you.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, so... tough love, right?
Yeah. What's your opinion on tough love? Now that it, you know, you're a if your childhood consisted of it, what do you feel about it?
I feel it's needed. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, yeah, of some of it, it needs to be a little bit less than our parents.
Mm-hmm.
But just slightly less. Not as bad as, like, you getting fucking bitch slapped for leaving your socks out.
Mm-hmm.
Or let me rephrase that, man slapped.
Right.
You know what I mean? But still enough fear of a consequence that scares your ass straight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think the, now that I'm older, the slap in the face wasn't terrible.
No.
No. I mean, it's just a slap in the face. It didn't kill me. It didn't leave a mark. It didn't bruise my face.
Right.
But it got my fucking attention.
Yeah.
Where I think that my stance on, let's call it capital punishment for children, is I do think that the fear and consequence is necessary.
Yes.
Because I have friends that were either raised without any of them, or are raising their children without any physical consequence, which I know people are against, but I think that you can tell the difference in the children that are spanked and are not spanked. I don't agree with hitting a child out of anger and in regards to your own anger, right? It needs to be a consequence
of something
more than a reaction.
Yes.
And I think that's the problem about my childhood that I have, is that there's some days that we were hit just because he was having a bad day. Not okay.
No.
But I can also say that as a parent, especially probably more with Ethan, I probably reacted more from my own emotion and hit him.
Mm-hmm.
More out of an emotion than consequence than I've ever done with Lorelai. Lorelai's spankings are a consequence and not a reaction, where Ethan, when he was younger, was probably a reaction more than a consequence,
mm-hmm.
but then developed into a reaction or consequence. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that's also because you are a different mom now than you were when you were raising Ethan.
Yeah, not just that, but also recognizing and controlling anger, right? Well,
right.
Because I had Ethan at 21, and just maturity-wise of not understanding the difference of this, you're spanking him because you're mad
right.
at him and not because you're teaching him anything or
correct.
There's a consequence to something. This has more to do with you. I'd rather calm down for 30 minutes and then say, okay, hey, it's time for you to get that spanking now.
Right.
As calm as possible.
Yeah.
Which is the way it developed with Ethan.
Right. And I had the exact same problem when Mason came here. there was a, thank God I had Dion, because my, I always reacted on my knee jerk reaction because that was the way I was raised.
Right.
You rolled your eyes at me, you were going to get your fucking ass beat. Because I'm not going to be disrespected in my house.
Right.
You know, so the, you know, part, you know, and I had to realize, okay, well, let's back up. Why is this happening? Why are we doing this? And let's figure this out, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, every child is different and it depends on the age.
Right.
You know, I found with him, surprisingly enough, which was scary, was telling him I was disappointed in him had far more positive reaction and changes than getting mad and yelling or threatening to hit him or any of that sort of thing. It was crazy. But some kids, you got to jerk them up.
Right.
You know, and it all depends on the kid.
Yeah. And, you know, there comes to a point where I can't even remember the last time my son was spanked. It's actually not that long ago though, because
he's 18. Maybe,
yeah, well, he's 19. I think he was 17 the last time he was spanked. He was definitely taller than all of us.
Okay, so please explain that story. I want to know how you spanked your 17-year-old son.
6'5" child is because we told him he was getting a spank. This is a thing I don't understand. So like my friend said the other day, she asked something from her son and his answer was no. That's not an option. This is my home, and if I tell you I want this from you, the answer is yes. And so I don't remember what the exact crime was, but the punishment was a spanking. And I don't care if you're 17 years old or not.
Right.
Drop your drawers so that you're just with a thin boxer on. And your dad's going to belt you 3 times.
Wow.
And he did it. And like the first one, no reaction. The second one, you could see even like tensed up a little one.
Right.
And then the third one, he like kind of jumped up and bowed up a little bit. And Nate was like, you need to calm yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Go to your room now. But those are the consequences of his actions. And he took it like a teenager.
Yep.
And did it. But I don't have a problem with that.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with spanking.
Right.
Now, my mom stopped spanking me probably around the age of 10 or so. And that's because, well, my mother had a really thick Elvis leather belt.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got spanked with that.
Uh-huh.
And then the last time she spanked me, it left a welt and she went, I'm never spanking her again. Now, don't get that twisted. I still got my ass beat. I just didn't happen with the belt.
Uh-huh.
You know, so she punished me. You know, that sort of stuff. But the spanking stopped at 10.
So then when she would hit you the other way, what was she, just with her hand? Like an open fist or closed fist? Or
Just an open palm.
Uh-huh.
She didn't.
On your butt?
On my butt. And then she only hit me in my face one time.
Mm-hmm.
And she regretted it because she was wrong. Because we were talking about something. I said something. She thought I was lying. And literally bitch slapped me across my face, busted up my lip a little bit because I was wearing braces. And when I looked at her like, what the hell? I didn't say what the hell because another hand would have came flying. But I was like, I was telling you exactly what you asked me. And then it was the whole awkward, like, we need space because she feels really horrible.
Uh-huh.
Kind of deal. So, but yeah, that was the only time she ever like hit me on my face.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can remember having welts on my butt and my thighs so badly that it was hard to sit down on a toilet and hard to sit down on, you know, the desks that have like the wooden seeps the bottom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That you could feel it. You could feel those welts going across your thighs, both thighs, and, you know, a straight line from the belt. I think the belt was probably the worst. I preferred, there were other, he used baseboards. One time we had to make our own out of like a 2x4 and drill holes on it. But I think he broke that one on Deborah.
Oh my gosh.
Most of the time though, it was reactionary. And again, those are the moments that I have a problem with. And those are the those are the moments that even my father had a problem with. You know, he wasn't proud of those moments. The spankings with the belt, the spankings with the baseboards, or even the wooden paddle that we met, they were given, the consequences were known and the punishments were delivered. I got a problem more with the reactionary, let me beat you with the back end of a fucking shoe.
Right.
Yeah. Reaction over something very minor.
Yeah.
And I think is a big deal.
Right. And I think so, because my mother is a daughter of abuse. So her mother was an alcoholic, a lot of physical abuse, and she did her best not to create the cycle.
Right. Right.
You know.
And I think, you know, and I know we've mentioned this a few times too, is that it was the same for my father, is that it's, you know, abuse in any form ends up being carried from generation to generation.
Right.
The difference, I think, being is that for my fifth sister, by the time she was born, my dad had a better understanding and ability to control his anger. So she never got hit the way that we did. She actually never even got spanking the way that we did. Definitely never fucking touched, you know, not sexually, but physically punched by my father ever. Then when it came to me, then I'm more like your mom, where in the beginning I could see it happening. I could see this reaction that I get the moment I get mad.
Right.
And having to learn how to control that.
Right. And it's like, okay, I need to step back.
Right.
You're fine.
And I also don't like it. I don't like that reaction.
I don't like that rage. Right.
Yeah, I don't.
Because you feel like you don't have any control over what's going on.
I also just don't like myself in that moment. I think it's funny that first of all, people assume, and maybe I am a bitch, right? So people think that I'm a bitch. They assume that I'm a bitch. They think that I enjoy having to read someone or be in a confrontation with someone. I actually really don't.
Right.
I don't like having to be mean or angry or anything like that. I hate it. I always have regrets afterwards.
Yeah. I'm same way. Don't like the confrontation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a fan of it.
Nope. Well, we got really sidetracked, Sabrina.
Yeah, we sure did.
But you know what? It's perfect timing.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So, all right then. So we went from board games to spankings. Talk about going down memory lane.
Yeah, well, hey, so memory lane, let me say this. I saw that Whoopi Goldberg said that Sister Act 3 is going to be happening. Are you a fan of the Sister Act franchise?
So I like the Sister Act movies. I did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Number 1 and 2.
What was the second one about? I remember the first one, but what was the second one?
The second one, there are teachers at a school, and there's...
Oh, yes! Lauren Hill is in it, isn't she?
Yeah, from the Fugees. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so yes, I like the Sister Acts.
Yeah, so Sister Mary Clarence is going to be back. Now, let me tell you, some of those fucking nuns, even from the original, were fucking old.
How are they going to get those... back.
There's
they
no
might
way.
Be dead.
Yeah, Sister Mary Francis.
Where's Alma?
There's no way she's still alive.
Well, maybe she was like Sophia from the Golden Girls, where she was younger and they just made her look older with all the makeup.
I don't know, but we'll see. It'll be surprising how many of the OG nuns are actually still around.
I hope so, because my three favorite, and I'm going to be so bad, was the fat one. Was the little redhead and Alma.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those are, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Alma had some sassiness to her. Like, You didn't think you were going to get it from her, but you got it.
Oh, yeah. I liked her. I liked her a lot. So that's exciting to know. And then the Dolphin Stadium. Did you see that?
No. What's going on?
So, you know, Florida is in phase three. We're no limit to capacity. The Dolphin Stadium wants to fill it to 65,000 for their game.
Okay, then. When Miami gets shut down again because they're freaking so many people.
Yeah, that's...
Don't say we didn't know this was going to happen because they haven't... They hasn't, like, down south been really still in phase one.
That's what I was under the assumption of. But, you know, the state mandate or the phase transition was for the entire state. And so there's this part of me that's like, okay, cool. If they do this, it gets football back to normal, right? If we can fill up the stands and then the other leagues, it's just one step closer to us going back to normal.
Right.
But also, as somebody that is not a fan of mask and somebody that is not a fan of social distancing, I'm definitely hanging out with more than 10 people in a group at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
The thought of 65,000 people all in one place, that's more than any riot, that's more than any election, that's more than anything we've had go on since March.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, you go out there and see how many cases. Let's see how much it rises, right?
I think step one is we'll be interested to see how many people are actually willing to go. There's a lot of people, even like me, that's like, hey, that sounds great. Let's do this. Let's start taking these big steps. Because so the article said as soon as that happened that WrestleMania was interested. Ethan said a bunch of the concert the event planners that want to hold events now at the Dolphin Stadium saying, look, if you're willing to do it, we've got bands that'll come and play.
Right. Oh, yeah. So they do.
There's parts of me that's like, all right, this is exciting. This is what we need to know. If I got free tickets, would I go? Probably
would
not.
You?
No. Too many people.
So, like, is it too many people because of COVID or is it just, like, too many people in general?
I think just too many people because of COVID. I don't mind big crowds, but we haven't had that example yet.
Right. So it's kind of like letting somebody else test the vaccine before you put it in you. Like,
it's right. It's like one of my clients or this guy that I met one time, he was creating a hovercraft that was going to transport passengers down the St. John's River, carrying about 80 people in this hovercraft. And he said, Serena, don't worry. You're on the first test drive once it's finished. And I said, no, sir, you put me on the 10th fucking test drive.
No, you put me when it's passed all the legal tests.
Yeah.
And it's available to the public.
I'm not doing that. I don't want to be on the maiden voyage. That's not me.
Right. No.
So I kind of feel the same way about the Miami thing. Super excited, but pick 65,000 other people.
And look, it's Miami. I'm sure there's lots of 65,000 people down there that are more than willing to go and do it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they can actually fill the seats. I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, I think so. But you never know.
Right.
So, craziness.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well, that's all I have.
Yep, that is all I've got as well. So, all right, guys, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Have a great day, guys.